Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football with the professor, John Clayton. If you guys have questions for John, text them in, 710-710. We'll try to get to some of your questions before we let him go for the day. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
Hey, I was looking at this list. 122 modern-era nominees for the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2022.
Mm-hmm.
You're a voter. What is the criteria for getting on the list? I know they trim it down to 25, and then they trim it down to 15 and all that, but of these 122, do they have to be in the league for a certain amount of time? What's the criteria for getting on the list?
Basically, the criteria is you know, either you've been to a Pro Bowl or you've done well during your career. You have a pretty good established record, and then what ends up happening is that you can have people like myself vote in people. Like for example, every year. I put in for Chuck Knox if he was not in there, and then like this year I put in for Dave Craig because he wasn't on the list. So we'll get the initial list, and then we get to add to it, and then of course we take everything and we vote down, and so then all of a sudden, because again, what ends up happening too is that we have a bunch of guys that are go to the senior list, so they come off. And so that's there. But again, it's like you got 122. I know there's 10 first year eligible. And you look at this year, and of course, you always carry over the guys who were in that top 10 from the previous year as far as the vote. And so they're going to be in there. But a lot of it has to do with the fact that you're all pro. Now, a lot of times what ends up happening, if you have a short career, you're pretty much not going to get on the list because you're not going to have the support to get on the list.
But there's no official, hey, you need to have been in the league 5 years. You need to have been in the top whatever of your position or any. So there's no real official criteria.
No official criteria other than good football play.
Gotcha.
Hey, John, I see Jamie Collins, did he come over with Matt Patricia with the Patriots? From the Patriots to
the
Lions?
Yeah.
Now it looks like they're wanting to trade him. Did he have sounds like he had kind of a rough game and they're maybe want to get rid of him.
Yeah, they do. I think they definitely want to get rid of him because what they see is some of the things that he did in New England led him to no longer be in New England is he got lazy and he didn't work as hard. And it's like you get to see him sometimes play well and then sometimes not play hard. And that eventually gets a coach who wants to bite your kneecap off in a very angry state. And so they end up now putting him in a position and they want to get younger at linebacker. But again, this is Detroit, and why I keep on saying that Detroit had no chance to win against Green Bay and no chance to win against San Francisco, because instead of adding talent, they're getting rid of talent. And Jamie Collins reminds me so much of Thomas Davis of the Carolina Panthers and KJ Wright of the formerly of the Seahawks, now in with the Las Vegas Raiders, because again, he was real good in coverage. That's one thing. He was one of the better coverage linebackers in the National Football League. But what ends up happening is that if you're not going to be putting out every down and every play, all of a sudden it catches up to him. Now with a new coaching staff, you can see that it's caught up to him in Detroit.
Hey, Dave and I were having a conversation at the beginning of the show about this defense and just trying to look at it objectively, player by player, and saying, all right, if you're another team out there, how many of these guys are legit just no-brainer starters on other teams? And we basically narrowed it down to three guys, and Jamal Adams, Bobby Wagner, and Diggs. Outside of that, you can make a case some of these other guys would be depth and not superstars elsewhere. How do you view this defense? Just trying to look at the overall talent.
Well, of course, you can do the same thing with the Rams, too, because you can look and say, okay, they got Jalen Ramsey, Aaron Donald, and Leonard Floyd, and a bunch of guys that you don't know, or they might be considered role players on some teams. Hey, it's hard to be able to get five, six guys who are great players. Seattle was able to do it in 2013, 2014 with the Legion of Boom. But, those are the defenses that go down to some of the great ever. But I think what you're looking at is that, we're still getting a continued overreaction to the game on Sunday, because take a look at the defensive numbers around the league. For example, Seattle, I think right now, you know, has the third worst defense as far as yards allowed, but yeah. Baltimore's right up there. Now, do you think Kansas City's a good football team?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I do, and I saw that also. Yeah,
yeah,
I think
Kansas City right now.
They're the two worst, right?
They're the two worst, Kansas City and Baltimore. You know, the Rams, who were the number one defense in the league last year, I mean, their numbers are down. But again, so much of this, and it's the sorting out process that happens, and you've watched it when you played, Dave, and you've watched it through the years, is that now it takes a little bit longer for everything to start to come together. And, you know, the difference, this, because would you agree that when you played, and really until about 5-6 years ago, you know, defenses start the season ahead of offenses. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Not now.
No.
And the reason is the quarterbacks now are so mobile, is that, and, you know, there's more two tight end sets that come back and, you know, put you in a position where it's like, okay, you're running around and you can make more plays, and that ends up happening. And of course, it also helps that penalties have increased, because a lot of the penalties are going to be on defense. You know, whether it's going to be, you know, a defensive taunting rule, whether it's going to be a legal hit on the quarterback, whether it's going to be a late hit on a player, and then of course the interference rules, because those are all big plays and add the chunk yards to your offense.
Yeah, definitely with the penalties. I mean, look, they have absolutely made it so difficult to play. You know, you look at if you a late hit and things like that, and those are things you can't really help. So it's funny. I think a lot of these guys just go. We've heard this from Marquise Blair. He's like, I'm not changing the way I'm playing. So, but doesn't it typically though tail off, John? Like after, you know, 2-3 weeks, as yeah. far as, like, for example, like the taunting thing, because, you know, here's the thing. I don't know if I brought this up yesterday, but remember Julio Jones catches the post route on Trey Flowers and then spins the ball, which I think is cool that he can make the ball.
You're
spin,
very impressed with
like
his
a,
spin,
like a top, like mm-hmm, a battling mm-hmm, top. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that's taunting, John. So I mean, I feel like that stuff's going to have to back off as the season.
They're
goes
not on. Backing off.
They have to, John.
Well, they have to, but they're not.
What about the NFL Players Association? Because, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, could say, hey, look, I'm expressing my, you know, my freedom and my emotions and the way I want to do it. And it's all about, oh, let the guys, you know, do that and celebrate and everything. And, you know, I would feel like they would stick up for the players.
The competition committee doesn't care. I mean, even though you have coaches on the competition committee, they're the ones who voted it in. The supervisor of officials plans to continue to implement it. It's a mistake. Each year, I think there's always going to be some mistake in officiating as far as a rule change, and this is a mistake because it takes away from the game. I mean, Tom Brady continues to rip on some of the rule changes. Like, for example, he did not like the number changes because he thinks it makes it too confusing for the quarterbacks to be able to figure out what position the guys are. And then the next thing is, he said the game's becoming so much softer right now because of what they're doing, you know, with the penalties. Yeah. And, you know, penalties are up, and that's not surprising. I mean, we kind of anticipated that. But in the end, I think what you're looking at is that it's going to be, you know, a tough time for defenses to be able to catch up. But, you know, I think that the taunting rule right now, they plan to continue to implement. I mean, that came down from several sources in the last couple of days.
Wow.
Wrong though it is.
Yeah. Well, I wonder, hopefully they'll change a little bit. Maybe there'll be some ridiculous, you know, that's what my dad always says. It's got to get worse before it gets better, so it might as well hurry up and get worse. So maybe we'll see something that's really, you know, some ridiculous, innocuous thing.
Well, did you, I mean, you saw the that defensive interference rule that was there, and it took till the whole season because they didn't back off that. And all of a sudden, the Saints get into a playoff game. You know, they're playing the Rams, and they're driving down. And, of course, you had the one bad call that you know, should have gone for the Saints, and it didn't. And they end up losing a chance to go to the Super Bowl because of it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and it was weird. We'll talk to DJ Reed later, but yeah, just the way that they're putting it out there, it's just. Did you see anybody get kicked out, John? Was there any from last week, or have you noticed anybody? I haven't looked at every single highlight, but as far as guys getting kicked out of games, any ejections?
Yeah, there's been ejections. No doubt about it. I mean, you got one ejection for a player that ended up going up and, you know, hitting a coach. That was an ejection.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about the Cleveland-Kansas City game.
Yeah, so it's like you have that one, and you have ejections for, you know, hard hits on the quarterback. No, it's staying at a pretty solid level compared to even last year, probably a little bit more than last year.
710-710 is the Mac and Jack's text line for your questions that you have for the professor. John, a couple of people texting in about the availability of Dalvin Cook. What do you know about him this weekend?
He should be able to go, but again, he's banged up, and he was able to finish the game at all that. But again, I think he's going to be able to play. But again, you know, you wonder with a leg injury if it's going to slow him down a little bit. It very well might. And what may slow him down even more is that the offensive line doesn't look very good. And, you know, they'll have to rely so much on, you know, Kirk Cousins passing and everything else. But, you know, Dalvin is a great, great back, should be able to play. But we'll see as the week goes on as far as the injury report.
Well, and remember when he got banged up last year, Madison – mm-hmm. Came in and had for like 112 yards. I don't know a whole lot about their offensive line, but I know that that Kirk Cousins has only been sacked four times, and you know they've gotten some pretty good yardage for him. It looked like they were blowing open some big holes in Arizona.
Yeah, that's it. And you know, they're a real disappointing team right now because you know we're talking about this on a show earlier today, not with Mike, but. You know what the question is, if the Vikings lose to the Seahawks, mm-hmm. and I think they play Baltimore next week. I'm not sure who they play next week, but they have a tough game coming up next week. If they lose that game and they're 0-4 and going into a bye week, I don't think it'd be a surprise if Mike Zimmer loses his job.
Oh wow!
I mean, because he's on the hot seat, and if he doesn't win this year, you figure he's gone. And I mean, here's the weirdest stat from this game. Coming up. Okay, there's two teams in the league that have not had a snap out of the rookies. Minnesota, Seattle. And Minnesota had 11 draft choices.
Wait, well, say that. Repeat
had,
that stat
we
again.
We had D. Eskridge.
D.
Eskridge had a couple of games.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Jet sweeps.
Yeah, yeah. So you're right about that. Eskridge was out there. But Minnesota hasn't. I don't think they have a snap right now with any of their draft choices.
You know, that's weird you say that because remember last year, Jefferson?
Yeah.
They didn't start they didn't start him. And he had hardly any targets, Justin Jefferson. And he was their first round draft choice.
Right.
Last year. And so, yeah, it's interesting. Some teams don't want to play rookies. And you're right. Well, it's actually Cleveland, but still. So, yeah, at Cincinnati, at Arizona, and then they got Seattle coming in there, and then they got Cleveland coming in there. Mm-hmm. So they lose to the Seahawks. And, you know, Cleveland's a pretty good team. Oof.
Yeah. Ooh, it's bad.
John, people texting in, again, multiple texts on this one as well. So a collective, Geno Atkins, what's the latest with him, and do you think the Hawks would still pursue him?
I think they still might pursue him, yeah. I mean, again, it's like, you know, I think they'd rather have Brandon Monet healthy and, you know, be out there. And you can see that they still have, you know, at least a spot right now for L.J. Collier. But, I mean, when they only have three solid defensive tackles, I think that he still remains a consideration. And, you know, I think right now, I mean, the emphasis is not on the defensive tackle position. I think the emphasis is now trying to figure out if they're going to continue to make any changes at the cornerback position. Because, you know, I know that, you know, when asked about it on Monday, Pete Carroll said that, you know, DJ Reed and Trey Flowers are battling. And, you know, certainly that means that, you know, there's a thought there. It's like, okay, we got Sidney Jones. We got Bless Austin, you know, and next week Trey Brown's going to be back on the roster. It's like, you know, could change be in the offing? I would hope not for DJ Reed. I mean, you know, everybody in Seattle except me and maybe a few more, I think even Dave and I don't know about Bob, but it's like they want to run Trey Flowers out of town, which is a mistake. I mean, it's brutal.
Well, that leads to the 360. Professor, in your opinion, why does Coach Carroll seem to have an unexplainable attachment to Trey Flowers despite his continued same mistakes and weaknesses?
Well, I mean, again, you say same mistakes. It's not like he's making 5-6 mistakes a game. Maybe it's one or two, and as Dave pointed out yesterday, that one completion wasn't on him. It was on Bobby Wagner not necessarily being over in the right position to help him out.
Bobby doesn't make mistakes. We've all learned that.
No, I'm not saying he made a mistake. It's just that he wasn't in position to be able to help him out because of the way that the play went. But, I mean, I think people just are overly critical. And they're right now, they're over. And again, to me, it sickens me on this one. I mean, they're overly critical on Ken Norton Jr. because they want him run out of town. And it's like, come on, man. I mean, he's popular with the players. He's a good coach. Pete Carroll supports him. Bobby Wagner supports him. I mean, he raised a lot of those linebackers, you know, K.J. Wright, for example, and Bruce Irvin and all that stuff.
Maybe he's a better linebacker coach as opposed to coordinator.
Well, he was good toward the end of last year, wasn't he?
Yeah, I could argue the schedule was definitely in their favor. I mean,
the schedule was tougher in the second half of the season.
Dave went through and averaged out what his defenses ranked in his time in the last 6 years, and there's not really a category he's excelled. I mean, just combine the average over his time from 2015 to 2020, Ken Norton defenses. Total yards, they've ranked 22nd. Passing yards, 24th. Rushing yards, 14th. Points allowed, 18th. Third down conversion, 16th. He doesn't really excel any of these defenses in any category.
Yeah, but how much of that is the rebuilding of the defense? Because, again, it's like, I mean, you go from the Legion of Boom, and there's going to be an adjustment, and it may take a couple years on that adjustment. Because, again, you're going to different players, and just like we brought up at the beginning of the show, is that, other than the three stars on the defense, how many guys are real stars on this team? And so you're building it with role players, and last year at the beginning of the season, going against some good quarterbacks on bad teams, they got picked apart, but as the season went on, they got better and better and better, and the pass rush came out well. I think you can see that they're still good at the linebacker position. They've got obviously two Pro Bowl safeties, and they just got to continue to get better at cornerback.
Well, yeah, and it's funny. The thing with going back to Trey is that I think that a lot of people don't know how to evaluate corner play.
Mm-hmm.
Because they just see a guy, make a catch, and then they're like, okay, that was on him, and not necessarily, but yeah, it's interesting. But also we talk about this too, John. That isn't the defense Pete's. I mean,
yeah.
Pete has a tremendous amount of say. So, I mean, I guess, what would Pete do? Fire himself? I mean,
well,
look,
maybe bring somebody in that's got a different vision and say, all right, I'm gonna turn over the keys to you and see what you can get done here.
Yeah.
He's not going to do it during the season.
Yeah. Well, and that would be a mistake.
It would be, yeah, because, again, you're disrupting things too much and you're overreacting. I mean, say what you want. It's like you can criticize, Ken Norton Jr. for last year. They still won 12 games. And say what you want about the game on Sunday. Sure, second half they fell apart, but they were still in position to win the game.
Hey, the Panthers, you think they're for real, John? We're not going to know after this week because
no.
Thursday Night Football is at Houston. Which
should they even play that game?
Yeah,
no,
that's
no,
right.
No.
We know that's well. And they're Houston. They're rolling with the Stanford guy, the quarterback,
Davis Mills. Yeah,
Davis Mills down there. But then after that,
I wouldn't say that they're rolling with Davis Mills.
They're going with.
They're going to get rolled over with Davis Mills.
Exactly. And then the next week they go to the Cowboys. So Cowboys pretty good. That was a good win for them in San Diego. So yeah, I was watching them on Hard Knocks. I know
there's no team in San Diego.
There is to me.
Oh, okay.
There will always be the San Diego Chargers.
Okay.
Hey, did you hear this, John? I think that one of the owners during the broadcast, I think I accidentally called him San Diego a couple of times, and then I referenced it, and I guess one of the owners of the Chargers got mad about that.
Who was that, Dean Spanos?
Yeah. I think so. So
yeah, I can understand.
You can understand that, yeah. But anyway,
well, he's going to have a rough year. It's going to happen more than once, I'm going to go ahead and guess.
Well, and didn't you say, John, that that they don't have ownership in the stadium? The Rams do.
Mm.
And the Chargers, aren't they just renting space at SoFi?
Well, they helped contribute money to the building of the stadium, and they are just renting. And so it's like they don't own it. It's Stan Kroenke owning it. And owning all the area around there. And so, they're kind of along for the ride. But the sad part is what was carrying over before they moved there, because they're in the tennis facility, is that they still get outdrawn by visiting fans. Like even in the game on Sunday.
Yeah.
There was more more fans for the what was it? They played the Cowboys?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's more Cowboy fans than there were Charger fans.
So wait, they help pay for the stadium, you said, but they don't have any ownership stake in it at all?
No.
How does that work?
So they might have a small percentage, but again, based on what they contributed. But Stan Kroenke owns this thing. I mean, he's the one who built it. It was $4 billion, so.
Yeah. Well. Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. But yeah,
and also remember this: it's like where Dean Spanos he's going to be very sensitive to all that. I mean, there's a lot of internal problems that he's facing with his family because one of his daughters wants him to sell the team and had a lawsuit, I think, against him. And so, you know, there's a lot of internal strife in that regard.
Hey, I like this Chargers at Chiefs. Mm-hmm. You know, even though Dallas went in and took it to the Chargers, you think the Chargers were maybe hyped up a little bit, or is Dallas that good? And then how you think they're going to do in Kansas City?
They're going to lose.
KC coming off a loss.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Chargers still have the talent to be a playoff caliber team, a wild card team, but the Chiefs are the second best team in football. I don't care if they're 1-1. The reason they're 1-1 is that Patrick Mahomes threw his first September interception in his career in the fourth quarter. And here he was driving down for what would have been the game-winning field goal where he had plenty of time to get it set up. And Edward Clyde Hilaire ends up fumbling the ball and losing it, and that killed the drive.
Hey, John, I forgot to ask you about this. What do you think of the mid-season Hard Knocks that'll be going on with the Colts?
Right now, I don't like it. I mean, because, again, you know, Colts could be out of it by week five. Mm. And the reason is that you know, they're 0-2. You got two bad ankles on Carson Wentz, and they open up against five teams that had 10 wins or more. And so the chances of them winning aren't great right now. So you're seeing a Colt team that may be out of it by that time.
Do you like the idea? It's kind of an interesting idea that you're going to have a Hard Knocks happening basically midseason with a team, though. That's obviously different. We haven't seen that
we've
yet.
We've never seen that. I don't know if I like it. I love Hard Knocks a lot. But again, it's like I think it's almost too much of a disruption for a team during the season.
Yeah, no kidding, man. I mean, I wonder. So the NFL just basically said you have to do this,
or Jim Irsay agreed to do it.
Yeah, I wonder why you would though, because you know, distraction during training camp's one thing. You know, there's lots of distractions. You don't have your whole set, but now all of a sudden you're prepping for a game, and that's. Mm. Hey, are the Steelers the most banged up team right now, or is it still the Niners?
No, it's Baltimore.
Yeah.
I mean, because Baltimore's down their top three running backs, you know.
Right, yeah.
They put the left guard on injured reserve, their first-round pick wide receivers on injured reserve, you know, their left tackle, Ronnie Stanley's all banged up. He missed last week. You know, Matt Marcus Peters, you know, he's out for the season with an ACL. No, it's Baltimore. And San Francisco's catching up again. And you have to start wondering about Denver. Because, you know, say what you want about Denver. I mean, they're off to a 2-0 start against two easy teams, and they have the Jets coming up at home this weekend. But, you know, they've lost two starters in each of the first 2 weeks.
Hey, we see that Fields is going to get the start for the Bears. Dalton's out with an injury. But we heard the head man say, hey, Dalton is the starter if he's healthy. So I guess this will depend on how Fields does. But once he's healthy, whether it's next week, 2 weeks, whatever it is, do you see them putting Dalton back in as the starter?
Yeah, because, again, I think they have to be concerned about Fields' health. Because, I mean, you know, here's Andy Dalton. He was scrambling around with that bad offensive line, and he gets a knee bruise. Okay, I don't know how long it's going to keep him out. But now you have Justin Fields, who holds the ball onto the ball, at least at Ohio State, you know, 2.95 seconds, and behind that bad offensive line, he can be at risk. And so because of that, I mean, you worry about injuries with Justin Fields, just like now we find out that Andy Dalton got hurt.
John, we appreciate it. We'll talk tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Coming up, we got bonus Blowers this week. It's part two of our conversation with Mike Blowers, and it's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, our player spotlight will feature DJ Reed of your Seattle Seahawks, so stay tuned for that. But it's bonus Blowers time. We had part one of the conversation yesterday, part two coming your way now. And we started this part of the conversation with the question, what is the trajectory for Kyle Lewis after dealing with all of the injuries he's had to deal with this season?
I think it comes down to what you're talking about. It's the overall health of Kyle. He's had injuries throughout his career, and it's something that I think you have to be somewhat concerned with. Obviously, the talent is there, and we'd love to see him out there in center field every day. He's proven he can certainly play that position. He provides a lot offensively to your club, but we have to wait and see on how healthy he's going to be. And as an organization, will you have to make some adjustments to where he's going to be defensively to try to take some of that wear and tear off of him? They certainly were able to do that this year with Haniger. Haniger's been healthy all year, and I think a big part of that is the way that Scott managed him and using the DH for him, especially on day games, giving him occasional day off. So he's been able to stay healthy, and maybe that's something that they're going to have to look at. But his overall health is something I'm sure that as an organization you're keeping an eye on. I don't think anybody's doubting his talent, though.
Hey, we were just talking, you know, about Tyler Anderson and you know, what he's been for this team. I'm curious, as a hitter in your time in the league, he's got such a unique delivery, and it's really similar to Kikuchi in that they've got this kind of odd pause at the top of the delivery. You know, he's got that little leg kick. A, what does that do for them, do you think? Just it's such a unique approach. But B, what, as a hitter, when you're watching that, what does that do to your timing?
Well, for them, I think it's just balance and timing for them. I think it gives them an opportunity to keep everything in line. Not everybody can do it that way. And I think one of the things that's unique about Tyler, if he can do that, change arm angles, and throw basically all three of his pitches from different arm slots, which makes it really unique and more difficult for a hitter to pick it up. But I think that once you go through it and you see it for the first time, if you're able to go up there, I think you're more concerned about where the ball is coming out and the timing part of it. I think for the most part, you'd be in tune to it, although he will quick pitch you, and sometimes he will double and triple pump on you too, and you're not sure what's coming at you, so that can be a little bit uncomfortable. But I think for hitters, after you've seen it, you probably will get used to it pretty quickly, especially right-handed hitters off of Tyler being left-handed. You're gonna pick the ball up in the slot that it's coming out of. I think for them it's more important, because I think for them it's something that they've developed, and it's more important for them on their balance and their timing and when they're going to release the ball to the plate.
Is it Johnny Cueto? Is he the one that kind of switches his delivery within an at-bat? He's got, like, multiple delivery. Is that the right guy, am I thinking?
Yes.
Thinking of? Yeah.
You are absolutely right. He's one of the most entertaining pitchers I've ever seen. It's awesome.
He's got seven different deliveries, and you'll see him within an at-bat. It's amazing.
It is amazing, and if everybody could do it, they probably would, but you have to remember, you still have to throw strikes, and they have to be quality strikes, and Johnny is somebody that is able to do that. He's been able to do that throughout his career. Most pitchers cannot, and that's the reason why they work on the same delivery time and time again, because they want everything to be in line, and they're just not capable of doing it.
Hey, Mike, we were asking the question yesterday, who's the sort of face of the rebuild? And I think it's Jared Kelnick. I think Bob brought up Julio Rodriguez. Would you agree it's one of those two guys that they really need to have success, which we're starting to see Jared Kelnick come around in the month of September. Does it need to be one of those two guys? They're the most hyped up players for sure.
I don't know if it necessarily needs to be them. I mean, when I think about that, if the face of the franchise, the first one that popped in my head was Kyle Lewis, just because he was the Rookie of the Year last year. The next one, I would say, look at Ty France and the year that he's having. He's certainly somebody that's going to hit in the middle of their lineup for a lot of years to come, and he's already proven that he's productive. Kelnick has really had a nice month of September, and if you look at his skill set, it's elite across the board. He can do everything on a baseball field. It's just being consistent, and he's showing signs of that here in this month and some serious power also. And then for Julio, I'm excited to see him get to the big league level. I know that they're going to manage his situation, but with the year that he's put together at 20 years old, he's going to push that envelope, and I wouldn't be surprised if he goes in and, like, realistically tries to win that job out of spring training, and I think the organization will take a hard look at that. So I think it kind of varies, Dave, as far as the face of the franchise. My hope would be that you have a number of guys that you can point to, including Logan Gilbert and some of the other arms that are going to be coming up also.
Hey, Mike, it was alumni weekend for the Seahawks. Got a chance to see a lot of my old teammates and some of the guys like Cam Chancellor and Sidney Rice. Who, as far as you go, the guys that you played with, who are the teammates that you keep in touch with the most? I imagine Dan Wilson's probably on that list.
Well, yeah, just because I see Dan all the time. It's typically guys at the ballpark. And you know, it's kind of neat doing the job that I do, that you lose touch with guys, right? We all have our own lives. You lose touch with guys. But they always show up. The Mariners do a really nice job of bringing guys back. And I get a chance to catch up with them then. So, you know, it was pretty cool last night. It brings back really great memories for me. But Aaron, I don't know what he did. He dug it up somehow, some way. But it showed a picture of the 95 team after one of their playoff games. All of us in the hot tub.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Looking at all those guys just brought back the best memories, because for me, that was the most fun playing baseball I ever had. And it wasn't just because of the winning and the excitement and all that. It was just because of that group of guys. And you stay in touch for a period of time, but then everybody kind of moves on with their lives. But it's always great to see them and catch up again when they're at the ballpark.
The beauty is, Mike, that your haircut in that picture is coming back in style now. The mullet is back.
Yeah, that thing was pretty awesome. I've been thinking about it too. Maybe next year you'll see that. Maybe I'll get rid of the goatee and bring the mullet back. I haven't tried in a while, but that might be something.
You're gonna look
Aaron would love it. That's for sure.
Oh yes, yeah. He would. Yes, he would. You're gonna look like everybody else. It's amazing how that's become a. I don't know if you've noticed, but it's just the mullet is a thing now, and it's all over the place.
I have noticed a little bit. Actually, my youngest son, he's in college, and he was talking about it, too. He had longer hair. He was thinking about cutting it. And then he was talking about a mullet just because a bunch of his teammates are doing that. So maybe he'll do it. He can rock it for me. That would be awesome.
Well, it just depends on what the wife thinks, right, Mike? I mean, if it's got to fly that test first, right?
That is absolutely a fact. No doubt about it.
Hey, Mike, one last guy I want to ask you about before we let you go, and that's Castillo. He's a guy that makes me I get the same feeling I had with Fernando Rodney, a guy who would ultimately get the job done, did it very well, but it could be a little bumpy along the way. You could be on the edge of your seat. I don't have that level of confidence with Castillo, sort of like Fernando. Like, if he's going to blow it, I'm not going to be surprised. Am I being unfair to him? Do you have that feeling when he takes the hill? He's just a guy that – You watch him up there. He looks uncomfortable. He looks like nothing on him fits. He's messing with his hat. He's messing with his sleeves. He's bending the glove. It's like nothing feels right. What's the feeling you get when he takes the hill?
Yeah, it's a fidgety routine that he goes through. And if you watch him, he goes through the exact same thing in between every pitch, including the way he puts the ball in his glove and the way that he'll twist at his glove and the way he pulls his hat back down. All of it's the same. I get it. I used to have the same type of thing, whether I was hitting or in the field. There's just routines you get into. So that part of it, I understand. I think for him, when you watch him and the way that he kind of falls off the mound and mechanically it doesn't look smooth, I think that gives people concern. I think for me, he's been actually pretty good overall since he's come back from the injured list. I was a little bit concerned. I was really concerned right before he went on the injured list because to me it looked like his velocity was down. There wasn't much to his slider. He was really laboring out there, and I thought, you know, this is not the guy that I remember seeing with the Rays that was pitching in the postseason. And then since he's come back, I think his stuff has been there for sure.
Mike, we always look forward to the conversation. Great stuff, as always. We appreciate it, and we will do it again next week.
Yep, good talking to you guys.
There you go. There's Bonus Blowers. Split that conversation into two separate conversations. Always appreciate his time talking some baseball with him. Coming up, is the Super Bowl window about to close for one NFL team? We'll hear about it when we sweep the dial next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
Well, Greg Bishop wrote a really interesting article about the Mariners and their rebuild, so I'd recommend reading that. But today he was on with Mike Salk, and they got to talking about the Seahawks, and they were talking about Pete and Russ, and he thinks it really is a strained dynamic. It could lead to a breakup after this season.
To me, it speaks to the tenuous nature of the franchise quarterback in the NFL. You know, I think that what you see are some hurt feelings, you know, from last spring and summer. You know, the trade demand that wasn't a trade demand and all the teams that he could play for. And, you know, beyond that, I think that, you know, you got to fall back on the slogan my wife put on a T-shirt for me. Haters going to have some good points. And I think that there are points that Pete made that are totally fair, that could be improved upon, that could be ultimately done better. You know, to me, this looks like short of a big-time year, a Super Bowl appearance, a Super Bowl victory. I would say that, you know, it's pretty possible, if not even likely, that this is the last year that they're together.
You know, I read some things like that once it looked like everything was settled, saying, hey, everything's good for now, but if this season doesn't go the way that everybody wants it to or expects it to, they could be right back in the same position, and that dynamic is strained, but there's sort of a Band-Aid on it, just sort of the way it was portrayed. I don't know what's happening behind the scenes, and Greg's a very well-sourced writer. He's a really good writer, so I'll take him at his word, and hopefully that's not the case.
I wonder whose feelings he was talking about. He said feelings are hurt. Does he mean Pete there?
I would assume Russell. Pete seems sort of impervious to hurt feelings.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because, you know, and I don't know that Russ was hurt feelings as much as it was he was angry. But, yeah, I don't know. I just Pete signed here through 2027. So he's talking about Russ leaving.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be surprised by that.
They'll be fine. They got Geno Smith.
Yeah, who, you know, where do you go? I mean,
you go to the
have,
quarterback tree, Dave.
You got to have
some Schneider's backyard, right?
Yeah. Oh, the O-line tree's there.
Oh, the O-line tree. Yeah. Yeah. Is the money tree around there, too? I don't know what's going on with the trees.
Yeah,
in
exactly.
Backyard, but
yeah, the cap space tree.
If Russell were to leave, I think everybody that wants him out, or we every once in a while I'll read you a goofy text we get about, he's average, he's no good. Those people are going to learn a tough lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Learn a really tough lesson about what you had and how hard it is to replicate that.
Well, and how long it takes to get, even if you get a young franchise quarterback, to develop him, or, you know, to sort through different kinds of, you know, whether it was like hurt Matt Hasselbeck, T-Jack, Matt Flynn. I mean, that was that transition. Luckily, you got Ross in there, but they had a great running game and a really good defense, and we don't really have that right now.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, dare I say that you guys might be starting to agree with Colin Cowherd.
Don't say that.
Okay.
Don't
maybe
dare
not,
say
because
that.
Because he comes at it a little more irrationally in saying that the Seahawks are nothing without Russell Wilson.
Russell Wilson fools you into believing Seattle is a well-oiled machine. And I'll ask the question that I asked in the offseason. What does Seattle do well that Russell Wilson isn't connected to? Take out Russell, they rushed for 60 yards. They had 10 penalties for 100 yards. They were dominated in time of possession. Their run defense was gashed. Tannehill threw for over 300 yards. Their drafting strategy in recent years has been weird as Pete Carroll suddenly has more control in the draft. Their seventh-round running back is markedly better than their first-round running back. Russell makes everything work.
I don't think he's crazy in what the question that he asked. Without Russell, what is it that they do well?
Yeah, for the last few years, you know, because he's made Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf who they are. The run game, you know, Chris Carson had 2 1,000-yard seasons in recent years, two years back.
But if you don't have the threat of Russell, is Chris Carson that effective?
Yeah.
And Russell's covered up a lot of flaws with that O-line in years past, as we've chronicled. He was able to survive it. He was able to thrive through it.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to go professor and just stop with the hypothetical playtime. What do they got to do to get the run game going here? Because that's the
get
you
that
know,
line blocking better.
I know that might be the thing I'm most concerned with going into this game. Not whether they win or lose, but, like, can this offensive line run block? Because we just didn't – we haven't seen that in the first – I mean, I thought – well, we all saw it. A lot of Chris Carson's yardage in that Indy game, which was 91 yards
– was him.
Self-made, you know. I mean, he was running into lots of traffic early on.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, in positive quarterback news, at least for Chicago, here's head coach Matt Nagy with the news that will save and revitalize the franchise.
Andy is still battling through his injury. We're glad that it's not his ACL. Justin's going to be our starter. Prep starts right now. And get out there and have a week of practice and see where that goes. But I know he's looking forward to it. Andy's been great. He's been extremely supportive and this is a part of the business, and so now it's a great opportunity for Justin and for all of us as a staff to be able to take this thing and see where he goes with this.
Was somebody dragging a dead body in the background there?
Yes.
I assume those are like flashbulbs, the camera. Like, wow, he actually made
the flashbulbs. That's going to be interesting. I mean, Fields got thrown into the game after Dalton got hurt. He didn't light it up. He was 6 of 13 for 60 yards and a pick. You know, so he's a kid. He's a rookie. He's going to go in there, and we'll see what he can do. He's obviously very mobile. He ran for 31 yards. But it's a lot on his shoulders. There's a lot of expectation for a franchise that's never really had that franchise guy that we've talked about, you know, incessantly. You can go back to Sid Luckman. But it's you know, I'm just curious if they're going to stick with the idea that when Dalton's healthy, he's the guy. So if he's healthy next week or 2 weeks, whatever it is, mm-hmm. Are you going to pull Fields out of there? And unless the guy's lighting it up, I would imagine you wouldn't. But anything like what you saw in this game, 6 of 13, 60 yards and throwing a pick, I'm going to guess Dalton's going to get inserted right back into that starting lineup.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I know that people have talked about let's not talk about football players like baseball players. Like, if you throw him out there, you're going to ruin him. That's not really the way it works. I wouldn't, if I was them, I wouldn't mind having him go out there. And, you know, that's how you learn.
But I guess it depends on what their expectations are. Like, hey, are we competing this year? Yeah. Was this supposed to be a postseason year? At that, then you're putting Dalton in, aren't you? You're not going to go, well, we'll just deal with the growing pains, the up and down nature of a rookie.
Yeah. Well, I like Justin Fields. I like what I saw in the preseason, but it's going to be a tough, you know, couple games for him anyway until he gets used to playing with this speed, you know, at this speed. But be the greatest upset ever if an Ohio State quarterback becomes
a superstar.
Superstar franchise quarterback in the city of Chicago. It's never happened, Bob.
Anywhere, for that matter.
It's just, well, yeah, the Ohio State is in and of itself just an interesting phenomenon, but. You know, the fact that it's paired up
in
with
Chicago, yeah.
the Chicago thing is interesting.
Who holds their passing record?
Is it Sid Luckman?
Well, no. Wasn't it Kramer?
No, it was Eric Kramer from 1995.
Yeah.
Yeah, my last year in the league.
It's amazing.
It was back when I was playing football, Bob. How about that, putting it in perspective?
Wow. And they were taken to the Super Bowl by Rex Grossman. Yeah. How about that? All right, coming up, we're going to... It's a time for the player spotlight. It'll feature cornerback DJ Reed. He's going to join us next year with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.